The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello, KKFI listeners. Welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowling, here with my co-host Luke Harness, and behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Mark Andrus, filling in for Linda Wilson. We're going to cover three topics today. First, we'll speak with Jacob and Drew, transgender men who will discuss how their local gym became a trans-plus-friendly Kansas City business. We will next have wardrobe stylist Jennifer Niehaus to talk about creating a personal transgender style. And finally, Luke will be interviewing me about my experiences with the transgender communities of four countries that I've recently worked in. I'll finish up the show with a community calendar update, as always. But first, Luke is going to give us a breakdown of some of the LGBT news of this week.
So there was a movie coming out that was supposed to be about Stonewall, and this movie flopped. The movie Stonewall was supposed to depict the events leading up to the historical Stonewall riots, which then began the pride parades and celebrations since. However, the movie actually whitewashes the true historical facts of the riots, making the main character a white, cisgender, gay man, instead of the pivotal trans women of color such as Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. The movie has a whopping 7% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is one of the worst that I've ever seen.
Well, talk about miscasting. I mean, you may as well have Carrot Top portray Nelson Mandela.
Good one. We have some updates on Kim Davis, who is the county clerk in Kentucky who refused to give out marriage licenses to gay couples. She's still in the media today. Since being in jail for 5 days for refusing the court order to give out those licenses, Davis returned to the county clerk office and erased her name and the office off the marriage licenses, which made a lot of people speculate whether how legitimate that made them. She said this was against her religious beliefs to be associated to these marriages. She's also switched to the Republican Party on her ticket rather than the Democrat she's always been listed as because she felt as though the Democrat Party abandoned her. Republican presidential candidates Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz openly support Davis's cause and are helping her raise more money for what she's doing, which is illegal. In Baltimore, Sandy Brown, a transgender inmate at a state prison in Maryland, has won a legal victory against the prison guards at this prison. The prison guards called her it and some kind of animal and watched her shower while harassing her. She was placed in solitary confinement for 66 days after the jail warden said she shouldn't be segregated from the population. This legal victory should hopefully cause some seriously needed training on how to properly treat transgender people, even in jail. And in Portland, a Portland bar has to pay $400,000 to some patrons they specifically asked to stop coming. The bar owner said sales were down on Friday nights because the locals assumed the bar was a gay or transgender bar due to the transgender group that frequented. He asked the group to stop coming, and they filed suit. The show Transparent is about the older transgender woman, was nominated for 11 Emmy Awards and won 5. There's always been controversy around Jeffrey Tambor, a cisgender man, playing the role of a transgender woman. However, he has done plenty of advocacy work and takes the opportunities to speak on trans issues rather than making the spotlight about himself.
A lot better than the way Jared Leto behaved after his portrayal in Dallas Buyers Club.
Yes. And there's a lot of speculation around the movie that's coming out in November, The Danish Girl, where Eddie Redmayne plays Lily Elba, who is supposed to be the first trans woman who had gender reassignment surgery, correct?
Yes. I think Redmayne has, from early reports, he's done quite a good job at trying to capture the essence of Lily Elb's life, but again, you're right, it is a cisgender person portraying a transgender woman.
Yes, and there's another movie that it leaves my mind now what it's called, but it's supposed to be, from the trailers, it looks like it's supposed to be about a young trans boy, but the director has made a lot of transphobic comments about saying that this wasn't a trans boy and it's supposed to be a girl who's confused, and so it's another mishap by Hollywood in portraying trans people by using cisgender actors and really not understanding transgender experience at all.
You know, Keep it classy, I guess.
True, true. And that is the news for today. So today we have Jacob and Drew. Today we have on the show Jacob and Drew, who are local transgender men in Kansas City. They go to local city gym in Waldo, where they work out. City Gym's motto is Be Fit, Be Well, Belong, which is exactly how it became a trans-friendly Kansas City business. Jacob and Drew will share their experiences finding a gym that welcomes all those who want to live a healthier life. But hi, Jacob and Drew.
Happy to be here, Luke. Thanks, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, no problem. We're having some technical issues here, but we'll be working around them. So, first, let's introduce yourself to the audience here. Just basic information about how it pertains to your transition and whatnot.
All right. I'm Drew. I'm 31 years old. I have been transitioning since 2010, so I'm about 5 years on T now. I had surgery in July of 2012, so I'm 3 years post-op, and I'm also the founder of the union.
I'm Jake, and I've been transitioning for just over 3 years. I've had top surgery for just over a year. I'm 26, and yeah.
Awesome. So, Drew, I know you were on the show before discussing the union and how that came about. Do you mind just giving us a brief description again of how that started and then how it pertains to this group with the gym?
Absolutely. So the union started about 4 years ago in my house. So I was looking for a support group in Kansas City and was coming up blank. I had reached out to the two trans guys that I knew at the time, and they didn't have anything really tangible. There were some online groups, and that was about it. So long story short, I created it. The guys that I did know brought a couple guys they knew. And it started out with six guys in my living room just talking about experiences and sharing resources. And now it's turned into over 120 guys on an online Facebook group that that can actually connect with one another in person when they want to.
And these are all guys in the Kansas City community?
Kansas City and surrounding metro areas. And we have some guys as far out as, say, Topeka, St. Joe, but predominantly Kansas City and the surrounding areas.
Awesome. And so what is the group that is associated with City Gym? It's called Momentum. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So so Momentum started as kind of it wasn't initially intentional. So I needed to find a gym that I could go to and feel comfortable, and I'd tried some of the big box gyms, and the experience was not the best. Some friends recommended City Gym to me, and Haley, who's the owner, like, you have to meet her. She's amazing. You're going to fit right in there. So I go check that out, and sure enough, you know, just going in, I knew that it was a really comfortable space. And so she gave me a tour. I immediately decided that, yeah, this is going to be the gym I go to. And, you know, she started training me, giving me advice, giving me tips. I was able to confide in her that I am transgender. And she's really cool with it. She's had some experience with the trans community. And one thing led to another. After about, say, 2 or 3 months of me going to the gym and experience things with her, the idea came up, like, if I'm benefiting so much from this, there's other guys in the community that are going to benefit from this. And thus, Momentum was born.
Awesome. What are some of those experiences, to backtrack a little bit, that didn't go so well at the other big box gyms you said, and then how that compared with going to City Gym? Because I know when I, as a student at UMKC, I've gone to the Sweeney Recreation Center, and the director there is awesome. They allow me to use the officials' locker room rather than having to use the men's locker room if I don't feel comfortable showering there in a public space. So with those big box gyms, what were some of those experiences that didn't go over so well that City Gym made up for tenfold?
Well, like you just said, there was no alternate at these gyms for locker rooms. So you had male and you had female, and you had to pick one. And I was early in transition, so, you know, I wanted to go in the male locker room, but it was not, I did not feel comfortable doing that. You know, the looks just even, you know, heading towards that way. And then even with the sign up process, so going in there to register for the gym and sign up for a membership, that you have to have a specific. You can't put an alternate name on file, or you can't be referred to as your preferred name. Everything has to be, you know, by the book, which whose book I'm not exactly sure, because it's not the same everywhere. But to them, it had to be that certain way with that certain name. You couldn't be basically, you know, seen as the person you were. So I wasn't comfortable just working out, knowing that afterwards or before going to the locker room, and knowing that they have me on file as someone that I'm not. So those experiences were not the best. And I know Jake might be able to speak to that as well, because he goes to a big box gym. Not that it's bad, but
yeah, I do. And you know, it's hard to going to City Gym and being a member there, and then going to another gym. It's really hard to go to other gym because I don't feel comfortable. I mean, everything from, you know, some of the members that go there towards, you know, the setup, towards, you know, the bathrooms and the locker rooms. I mean, at City Gym, it's a lot different because you have your single person bathroom, your single person shower. I mean, there's a lot more comfortability, I guess you can say, and so you're able to actually, you know, work out and do what you got to do. But at those other gyms, it's hard to explain. But I mean, it just comes around being comfortable, and it's hard to work out if you're not comfortable. So
exactly. And the alternative when talking about showers is just to not shower, and that's really gross. Makes your car stink up real bad. So did you, prior to having top surgery, did you have similar experiences then too with not just the shower aspect, but with binding? And we should let the audience know that it is very dangerous to bind while exercising. That is not recommended, but I know some people do. It's the only way they can feel comfortable to work out in public.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely was working out before surgery, and when I would go to another gym, I would always wear, you know, like a large sweatshirt or a large shirt, anything that could kind of not show that I didn't have surgery, because, you know, I didn't want guys looking at me, and I didn't want people knowing and staring and it being awkward. So, yeah.
Awesome. So when was the first cycle of momentum that happened? What time was that at?
That was January of 2013. Obviously, I think it was 2013.
So how many people have been involved since then?
Upwards of, I would say, 25 guys, possibly. We have about 6 to 8 guys per cycle that sign up and join. So we've had 3 cycles, and are about to start our 4th. So about 25 guys.
Awesome. And I know how it works, but for the audience, if you want to just in general let us know how the momentum cycle works in the program, how City Gym works with a group, and how that all goes down.
Absolutely. So basically, it's not an advanced program at all. So we want people to come in and get comfortable with the gym, get comfortable with the equipment, and with just the process of showing up and working out. So Haley at City Gym, and she has 2 trainers that work with us specifically as well. We go through 3 months. It's a 90-day program, and basically it is form training on machines. It is learning about nutrition and eating right.
Which is the hardest part.
For some people. and it's about accountability and that group experience as well. So we just want people to be comfortable, because what they take from this, they can apply to their experience afterwards. So really it's just getting comfortable and used to the process.
Awesome. And so Jake, were you in the first cycle?
I was in the first cycle. I've been a part of every cycle so far. And it's been really great, because I mean, you know, I've learned a lot, and I didn't have any knowledge before attending a cycle, and so now I have this knowledge and I can go, you know, wherever with it. So it's been really beneficial, and I'll probably continue to be in the next cycle as well.
Yeah. Audience can't see, but Jake is buff. He's buffed. I mean, Drew too, but Jake is really buffed up. Drew's
offended.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and then once we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how City Gym has been in the media with Jake and Drew.
Have a little spare time? Always wanted to be in radio? Well, then come on down and get involved in your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI. On the air or behind the scenes, we need your help, and it's lots of fun, too. For more information, call Bill at the KKFI offices at 816-994-7869.
And we are back on Trans Talk with Jake and Drew here in the studio talking about City Gym and working out. And I seem to have offended Drew when talking about his physique. Drew is also very fit and awesome. It's just that Jake could probably hit someone with his arm and cause serious injury. Just saying. It's just a fact.
I know. Just looking at the two of them, I can feel my lesbianism slipping away.
Oh, I'm dead.
What is your answer? I'm just kidding. So now we want to talk about... So City Gym has been in the media quite a bit lately, and not just with this group, but also I think being sponsored by Nike and just having a lot of cool stuff happening at City Gym, which is just great for Kansas City as a community as well, all this cool stuff happening in Kansas City. So there was a Google ad that happened about City Gym and kind of pertaining to the group of Momentum. How did that come about, Jake or Drew?
All right, Drew will answer. I could not begin to explain the process here, and Haley, the owner, would be able to speak to that better. But it was a long process, but at the very end of it, City Gym was chosen because of what they offered and how inclusive they are as a gym, and Google was very interested in that, and they didn't find that in the hundreds, maybe thousands of people that had submitted for this opportunity. So that's awesome for one that they were noticed above all these other people. So they submitted in on a long process. That's how it came.
And so what exactly? Some people may have not seen the Google ad, but what was the? So it was essentially Google just wanted to highlight a local business.
Yeah, they have the Google My Business. Mm-hmm. They offer that, Google does. So they wanted to feature a local business that uses the product to promote their business, essentially.
And so Haley approached you at the group and decided that she wanted it to be about being inclusive, or were there some other ideas going around? How did that actually come about that it was going to be about the group?
Well, I mean, we'd been doing Momentum for a while, so she already knew that you know, the group and what we offered. But whenever Google was looking into that, into working with Haley and City Gym, that's the aspect that really set them apart. And granted, it's not something that's just off the wall. I know that there's other things that are going on in places, but out of all the submissions, I mean, that was the most unique to them. So it was just the fact that they have this specific program specifically for the FTM community in the Midwest. So just everything was narrowed down. It was that interest.
I've been very encouraged listening to you speak about City Gym and its management and policies, but a large part of the gym experience is the other patrons and how they treat you. And I wanted to just hear from you a little bit about how are you treated by the other patrons at City Gym?
City Gym is absolutely a community. The people that go there, I mean, it's very intentional. They're going there because they're part of that community. Their beliefs align with City Gym's beliefs, or vice versa, I guess, you know. And so I have never had a bad experience with the other patrons. And I always joke because we consider it like the Cheers of gyms, because you go in there and you know so many people by name or by you know, what you see them in there doing. But everyone's so friendly and so open-minded and friendly, yeah.
Personally, I never understood the locker issue. I never understood in this day and age why it's still expected for people to shower in a group. And I had a lot of trouble when I was young and, you know, being in boy mode because I was very slim. I had no body hair. You know, I was a very feminine look. And thanks to my intersex hormone condition, I actually had breasts, which made group showers something that was impossible to do. So yes, like Luke alluded to earlier, I did stink up my car a bit.
And the showers at City Gym are awesome. The private bathroom,
yeah, suites,
the suite, the shower suites. I apologize. They are really nice and offer that privacy.
Absolutely.
So, Jake, you are a main component of the Google ad. How did that come about? That they decided they wanted to share your story, and what made you decide to go ahead and go be in something so public I mean, Google was going to be sharing this, just millions and millions of views.
I think, well, when they came down here and they were kind of looking for a story, you know, Drew had given them some intros onto the guys that were in the cycle. And I think they kind of went with my story because I had surgery about 2-3 months prior. I hadn't been to the gym yet. And so they really wanted to capture that emotion of being in the gym for the first time after, you know, 2-3 months and, you know, not, and having a different type of chest and, you know, what, just the emotion from that. And so they went with that story and, it was good. I mean, I think I was nervous, but at the same time, you know, knowing that it was going to go public, I think it came down to the simple thought that if this is going to help others and if this is going to branch other ideas elsewhere, you know, all over the U.S., then why not? You know, this could be a really positive thing. It could really spark some interest in other gyms and other, you know, guys groups around the city, you know, just all kinds of stuff like that. There's so many things that could come from this. So that was kind of my thing, so...
And Drew, did you feel the same way? Because I know prior to that, you were pretty stealth and not having your transgender identity be so public like that. So how did you feel about that? Because you're also in the video.
Right. I had a talk with my wife. We sat down and, you know, weighed the pros and cons of what it would mean for, you know, me individually with my work and basically living self and then our relationship and our experiences with people we come into contact on a day-to-day basis. So we had a conversation and the union, which Momentum stems from, is it just means so much to me and to us that we, ultimately it was like it's worth it to put ourselves out there for what this can bring to our community.
Awesome. And then you both got to go to L.A. to the ESPYs Awards, yes. Which is about sports. One of you want to talk a little bit more about what that experience was like, being, because I know that's a lot of people, if they don't know what the ESPYs are, they know that Caitlyn Jenner won that award, the Arthur Ashe Award, and had that amazing speech about it, you know, very shortly after she was publicly, you know, outed as transitioning and being public about that. So what was that experience like overall?
Overall, it was very humbling. I mean, to me, and I know Drew, it definitely was being there and being able to be there during this, you know, this moment of history being made was a very humbling experience. Very emotional for myself, I know. You know, being in that room while that was happening and being around all these athletes and all these people that, you know, they work hard to get where they are. And so, for me, it was very humbling. I mean, once-in-a-lifetime deal.
I thought it was incredible. It was surreal. I've never been to LA, and I've never been to a city like that. So I was super excited for that aspect of it. But Jake and I talked a lot beforehand because we only found out about a week before we were going that they were having us go out there. So we had a very little time to take in the realness of it. But it was incredible to be there. Like he said, during that moment in history when Caitlyn Jenner received the Arthur Ashe Award for courage, that was probably the most incredible thing to be there and witness and be a part of. That's what I took away from it. That momentum, that union, this thing in the Midwest got to be part of that experience.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, you guys, for being on the show with us. I think that was an awesome experience, an awesome spotlight for Kansas City and all the cool stuff that's happening locally. So thank you again for being
on
the show, and we hope to see you again.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, thanks.
That was a wonderful interview with those two men, Luke, and they really were both very buff.
Yes, both of them, all forearms.
Yeah.
Very thick.
We're now going to have a talk with Jennifer Niehaus. Jennifer is a wardrobe stylist who owns her own company called It's So You. She works with women, men, teens, tweens, and the LGBT community. And Jennifer's business consists primarily of three services, edit, style, and shop, which help individuals learn about their personal style and how to dress in the most flattering fashion. So welcome to the show today, Jennifer.
Thank you, Una.
From a general standpoint, what would you say is the most important rule a transgender person needs to know when they are trying to develop a wardrobe in their new gender role?
Well, I have come up with three rules and then a final. So first, I would recommend be observant and watch others. And thinking further on this, go to specific places. Be mindful of where you go. For instance, I was thinking about the plaza, where you can get a variety of people and maybe people that have thought about dressing for the occasion and mm-hmm. looking at people, you know, from head to toe, how they're accessorizing, what shoes they're wearing, just to be familiar with what's out there. Two, be patient, because I know that it's an adjustment period when you're transitioning and going through the body physical changes. Third, I would recommend researching magazines and going into stores and looking at how the mannequins are made up.
Yes, I've some of my best outfits were stolen from mannequins.
Well, even cisgender outfits are stolen from mannequins. And as a wardrobe stylist, I'm always amazed how people can buy something off a mannequin and then continuously put that one outfit together when my eyes see so many more opportunities with mixing and matching. Mm-hmm. But finally, is answering your question, I want to, you know, make the suggestion, you know, look for somebody or just some professional guidance. You could go into a store that might have a sales associate that can work with you a little bit one-on-one, or, you know, look for, you know, somebody like myself, perhaps, who could give you that honest feedback, because even everybody will try to get the reinforcement from our friends, maybe our family, and that doesn't always give you the best of the best. And if you're looking right. to really compliment and find out those little nuances in your style, you might have to take it to the next level.
For transgender women specifically, what are some of the greatest struggles which you find they have when they're dressing in their new gender role?
A lot depends on where they're at with their stage of transition, but the most obvious challenges are naturally having the broader shoulders, they're probably a little bit taller, larger feet, hands, and smaller hips. In addition to those, I think the key part that plays into this are the undergarments, because when you're trying to fit maybe your top size, you need a trans woman needs to be familiar and experience what bra type, what size cup she's going to be, so that her tops will fit her correctly. And the same with, well, we're talking specifically about trans women. The shoulders, for instance, there are ways to minimize, and also with the waistline, we can do some camouflaging, and also just looking for ways that the fits tailor and de-emphasize or emphasize.
You know, I'm rather small overall, but my shoulder to hip ratio does kind of give me away. One of the things I do to disguise my shoulders is I never go bare shoulders. I always have at least half sleeves or cap sleeves. So things along those lines are what you would suggest for this camouflage?
Yes, avoiding like that wrap around your neck so it's not showing a lot of your shoulders. There are sometimes the way that the shirt is cut where it doesn't have a seam at the shoulder, where it is just rounded.
Okay.
That can de-emphasize the shoulder area. And then also playing with the pants or the skirts that are a little bit more fuller. For instance, the A-line or the that's a real popular skirt right now, and having it be a little bit more fuller, yeah.
I can understand that. In terms of the guys, what do you think is the greatest challenge in clothing for them?
probably the chest area, and it's they're probably wanting to defocus on their transitioning because they're trying to be flat chested. And I was thinking about how fall is a great time of year, the fall winter, because we have all the layers. And I recommend jackets and blazers. That can be a great instant way to add style and to minimize.
What about the selection of jeans? Are jeans better for transgender men all around, or would you recommend shorts to show the legs? You know, to especially as the body hair comes in, it forms a clear visual cue.
Right, right. Well, just go with your with what you're comfortable with. I think, of course, jeans are the kind of the go-to these days. There's so many styles and variety of jeans. The wide leg, you know, you have the low waist, the higher waist. It's you know, the wider thigh, a thick thigh, and that if you're looking to, because the men probably want to add a little bit of bulk, but you don't want to wear things that are too baggy either.
Right. There's always a problem because women's jeans are not only sized differently, they're proportioned differently. So when I wear them, I generally have a lot of empty space in the hip area.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I have no idea how any of that sizing works. So I was always just wore boy clothes, so I have absolutely no idea. I get confused when people talk about that.
Well, with the gals, what I might recommend are the jeans that maybe have some flourish on the back pocket. Not too much. We don't want to go too blingy.
Right.
But, you know, having like a pocket that has a button or something that can add, you know, some hip proponent to it.
We're talking with Jennifer Niehaus about transgender fashion. We're going to take a short break and continue the conversation here in about 4 minutes. Thank you very much. And welcome back to Trans Talk. We are continuing our conversation with fashion consultant Jennifer Niehaus. And I think Luke had a question he wanted to ask Jennifer.
Yes, earlier you were talking about for trans women in the shoulder to hip ratio. So then I was wondering as well for trans men, what to do about if a trans man has wider hips, with what kind of clothing or any colors and options of that to kind of camouflage that as well.
Well, I think it can also be a little confusing these days with some of the trend fashions where we're going into more of the slim fit with the shirts. They're a little bit more tucked in the waistline, and therefore I might recommend just sticking with the more traditional straight fit as opposed to the tailored fit. And also, the darker the colors, the more slender you're going to appear. And when you're looking perhaps for that, for the blazer or the jacket, you know, even today again, the fashions are changing a little bit where the jackets are a little bit being worn shorter now. Mm-hmm. And it might be, you know, better to look for the jackets that are a little bit longer.
Right.
A common question that transgender women have is about shoes. Basically, you know, most of us ladies love to wear heels from time to time, and for transgender women, a higher
from
heel...
From time to time? Most of the
okay.
time.
Okay. Well, my wife rarely wears them, so I had to throw that in. But, you know, the shape of a heel can give you a visual appearance of shortening the foot, but also if a transgender woman is already at or above the average cisgender female height, there's two horns of a dilemma there. Would you like to address that?
Yes. So I have found that at least the clients that I've worked with really enjoy the higher heel. And this has been a learning experience for me, understanding why the trans women are kind of fixated on the higher heel. And it's been a personal journey, just understanding like the HRT, the hormone replacement therapy, where it can affect your moods. And when you're going from more male to female, my clients have told me that they get kind of giddy and excited about the new opportunities going into this kind of adolescence mode. And I think that I remember when I was in my teen years, fashion was, you know, definitely on my mind all the time, and wearing heels was very exciting. I would go into my mom's wardrobe and try to wear her heels all the time, and that wasn't always the best solution. But back to the heel height, if you're taller, you can still experience that kind of sexy appeal that heels have, and maybe consider, rather than going for the full 5-inch stiletto, is tapering down to maybe more of the kitten heel, the 1 to 2 to 3 inch, and maybe not wearing shoes that have an added platform, which a lot of the shoes these days have that, and that's great for us that are petite, but not for the tall gals.
Can you give me an example of one of your clients that you've worked with? I've met several of them, and I have to confess, I've seen some amazing results in cases I've seen. But can you talk me through the process of how you worked with one of your clients?
Yes, and I've, again, this has been just a wonderful experience, and I've learned, you know, so much when it comes to understanding like the undergarments. For instance, one time I went to Dillard's, and for those of you who are curious, I've made relationships with some of the department stores and stores where we can have a very comfortable experience, you know, getting the private dressing room and that kind of thing. But anyway, we were trying on bras, and it's trying to find, you know, that cup size, but making sure that it looks natural, as opposed to, you know, you don't want to be wearing the breasts need to be kind of, you know, blended in. And I think that sometimes that was challenging for a couple of my clients. And interesting, we went down to Birdie's with both of these clients, and I learned more new things about how to make them look more natural from Peregrine Honig. And then one thing that was curious to me is one gal told me that she wanted to share with me what was in her purse. And so she took out all the items in her purse, and I thought, well, what a great idea to, you know, be knowledgeable about the things, you know, that you need for makeup and just some quick go-tos that a woman needs on an everyday basis.
A frequent problem that transgender women and men both have is that as a result of our transition, many of us are either unemployed or underemployed, and thus putting forth a significant amount of income for a new wardrobe is very difficult. Are there some recommendations that you would have for places that transgender persons can shop, or ways that they can try to save money?
Oh, sure. There are lots of great resale shops in Kansas City. I shop at them often myself. And I would recommend Savers for both trans men and trans women. I might recommend Arizona Training Company. And then there are some boutiques especially for women, Fashionista Exchange and Lulu's Boutique, and then there's a clothes mentor. But you can also get some if you just know when the sales are, like at Dillard's, they often have, like this weekend, they're having an additional 40% off of their sale prices. And then you're almost getting things that are less expensive than what you might find at Savers or the thrift stores. And so finding out when those spectacular sales are can be great. But also you could go to eBay and online resources. But Kansas City has a great resource resources for shopping.
Just have a final question here for you, which is, you know, it's more than just clothing, isn't it? There's a matter of etiquette and other things. Could you list some of the other things that transgender people need to be aware of to complete their transition?
Yes. I have noticed sometimes with the trans gals that the kind of the dining etiquette is really important, and it's knowing those specifics. I think everybody sometimes falters with manners at the table because we are so casual with everything from our wardrobe to to just hanging out. But I think, you know, even looking up, you know, etiquette classes just for, you know, some quick reminders, and going through, like, how do you hold a wine glass? How do you hold a scotch glass? How do you hold a beer glass? How do you, when do you put your napkin in your chair when you sit down to a meal? When do you put it on the table? How do you put your silverware on a plate to let the waiter or waitress know when you're finished? And one of the things that we might be doing, I might be working with Peregrine Honig, coming up with an etiquette class, and it's called Dining with Emily Post. And I ordered an Emily Post etiquette book, and it just looked like this little paperback, but when I received it, it looked like this Webster dictionary. And having gone through it to learn and to see some of the, you know, back in the day, like the 50s and 60s, those specific mannerisms, you know, they can be reapplied today. And I think that something like that, Emily Post, or Dining with Emily Post, would be a fun experience.
Thank you very much for joining us, Jennifer. We're going to take a brief break for a station announcement and then return with Luke.
And anyone interested in learning more about Jennifer or following up with her about ways in which her services might help you in your situation can go to the web to itssouwardrobe.com, spelled itssouwardrobe.com.
Thank you.
Have a little spare time? Always wanted to be in radio? Well, then come on down and get involved in your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI. On the air or behind the scenes, we need your help, and it's lots of fun, too. For more information, call Bill at the KKFI offices at 816-994-7869.
Next, we want to have a conversation about transgender rights and lives on an international level in four other countries. Our own Una Nowling has recently traveled to England, China, Thailand, and India for her day job. And while she was in each country, she met with transgender people there and interviewed them about their lives, living conditions, and rights. Can you briefly describe, to start us off with, how you met with transgender persons in each country?
Well, I started by working connections online, trying to locate representatives of the local communities in each city I would be visiting. This worked out well sometimes, but in China, everyone was a bit too uneasy to meet with me in public, even at my hotel, restaurant, or a private club. But for the other three countries, I was able to spend quite a bit of personal time with transgender persons and speak to them about their lives.
Interesting. Well, let's start with England. How did the transgender persons you met there feel about their lives and rights? And I wonder how closely related this is to people in America.
England is very similar to America in many ways, except due to the greater laws and protections available in the United Kingdom, there seems to be a much greater desire to go stealth or even deep stealth in England, as opposed to living outwardly transgender. To hear my acquaintances speak, however, although institutionally they have better acceptance, socially they still undergo a significant amount of prejudice and intolerance. I also found when I was visiting the transgender communities in Manchester that there was a sharp divide between the cross-dressing and the transgender communities, much more so than you would see in Kansas City. At one club, I was even ostracized after hanging out with the cross-dressers, even after I attempted to buy a round of drinks for everyone. And believe me, that says something. A couple of the transgender patrons explained to me later on that transgender people just don't like to associate with cross-dressers in that neck of the woods, and I found that somewhat sad.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing you posting about that on Facebook, and it was really shocking. Now we'll see even more so with China. China has a reputation for being restrictive on human rights in general. So how are they on transgender rights?
You know, China is mixed a bit. By the letter of the law, they're not that bad. They do at least allow you to change gender markers, which is a big improvement, but only with surgery. There are no health nor employment protections and no anti-discrimination protections in general. Police harassment is rampant, however, and that was the fear that my contacts had with meeting me in public. Social discrimination is mixed, and it's very dependent upon the circumstances. A large amount of the social discrimination is actually related to the intense Chinese focus on marriage and children. Being transgender could mean that you may not be able to be married and have a son, since daughters are still second-class children there. And therefore, being transgender is a negative in the same way that being gay or lesbian is. So it's more about procreation rather than a disapproval of a gender expression. Because of this focus on the family, so to speak, transgender persons are sometimes viewed as being, well, the Chinese word is difficult to translate, but it almost means like poison or toxic. If you're an older transgender person, it can actually be somewhat more acceptable, especially if you've had your quota of male children.
Oh, wow. And then next you went to India, and as you said, India has a large population of transgender persons known as Hijra.
Yes.
Did you meet with any of them?
I did, and for the audience, there's a defining point I need to make here. While the Hijra are transgender by a strict definition, they're best described as third gender, meaning that their goal is not to change gender from male to female or vice versa, but to become a separate gender identity entirely. And they have even petitioned to the United Nations for recognition as a third gender ethnic minority. This has led to some resentment among the actual Indian transgender people who are trying for a full transition because they don't like being lumped in with a third gender population that they just aren't part of. The Hijra are difficult for a Westerner to understand, and part of it is due to the remnants of India's caste system. They're generally ostracized and outcasts, and I even heard the word pests used due to their begging and singing and dancing. Yes, it's terrible. They're considered lucky for blessing babies or weddings and such, but outside of that, most Indians really seem to want them to just go away. And another part of it is that they live in utter poverty at a level we just can't conceive of here in the United States. And so it was difficult for me as an affluent Western woman to really understand their world.
Wow, I can't even imagine how emotional that would have been to see that, how poverty-stricken that community is, and also knowing that our community here is also dealing with financial issues as well. Now, I think this will be really interesting, knowing what we know about Thailand, and that's the last country that you visited. Thailand is known not just for its good transgender surgeons, but for its sex trade involving transgender women. And did you have any experience with them?
We have to say flat out, Thailand is an incredible country for transgender acceptance. Transgender women and men are everywhere, working in every role from being consulting engineers like myself to part-time at, the shopping malls. In the shopping mall next to my hotel, my personal assistant took me to meet the Katui, or ladyboys, as they're both called in the country, and I was stunned to discover that there were no less than a dozen Kitui working the cosmetic counters at a high-end department store. And after I very tactfully, I think, introduced myself as being Kitui, all the gals came running up and gathered around me, pointing at themselves and saying, "I am Kitui, I am Kitui." And we're very open about it. One gal was pointing to her coworkers and saying, "Operation, no operation, operation."
Wow.
After a while, the manager came over to see what was going on. And after some brief explanation, the manager, this really dour looking lady in her 50s, pointed to herself and said, "I am Kitui." Oh, and wow. It was amazing that nobody really cared. I also went down to Nana Plaza, which is basically the seediest and raunchiest place in Southeast Asia, where there are hundreds of Kitui and tomboys, which is a local word for trans men, performing on stage, singing, working as escorts and sex workers. I spoke with two of the Kitui sex workers, and for the record, paying for their time to interview them costs just the same as having sex with them, and discovered that unlike the case of most countries where the transgender persons are forced into prostitution, a significant number of the Kitui and tomboys choose the work on purpose because they know they are seen as a kink by visiting outsiders and they want to exploit it. Many act primarily as escorts and may work a whole night without ever doing more than kissing or cuddling with some businessman, taking home a fairly good salary overall. And while they weren't especially happy in that job, they also were treated reasonably well with respect to their employment status and benefits. It was very eye-opening.
Oh, I bet that sounds like exactly the opposite of the experience here in America.
Yes.
And so considering all of this, which country would you most want to return to?
Thailand, hands down. The climate was incredible. But everywhere I travel, I know I can pass most of the time without problem, but I refuse to do that. When the occasion arises and it's appropriate, I tell people openly that I'm transgender. The reaction I received from the Thai people of all ranks and classes was complete and total acceptance. And, you know, it was more than that. If I told people I am Kitui, it was greeted with about as much drama as saying I have brown eyes. In other words, it was just how you were born, so why would anyone discriminate? My Thai personal assistant, who is a very wise older professional woman, spoke to me at length about this, and she summed it up very nicely, and I'm quoting her, "You tell your transgender friends in America to come to Bangkok. The Thai people, we love them, and we will respect them." And that just about moved me to tears.
Wow, that sounds like such an amazing experience, and I think I'm going to put that on my bucket list to visit these different countries and find out some more experiences myself.
You definitely should, Luke. Well, I'm going to move into the community calendar update and tell you what's going on in the Kansas City area for transgender-related subjects. The next meeting of Trans Plus Allies Group at UMKC, which is open to the public, will be on October 7th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And during this meeting, the discussion topic will be the Discovery Life program, which aired earlier this year, New Girls on the Block, which featured many transgender friends of mine from Kansas City. And we had a program a couple of months ago with several of them on. And they're going to discuss the media representation of transgender folks in general. Please note that for October, the meeting will be held in room 402 of the UMKC Student Union.
And I will be helping facilitate that.
Oh, very good. Go there and see Luke. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. I'm sorry. That's a call for action. Don't go and see Luke. Oh, wait, that's another call for action. Oh, dear. I'll just forge on. On Wednesday, October 14th and 28th, the Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at the Like Me Lighthouse. Hear Me Out Toastmasters is an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills. And every third Thursday, the Equal Trans Support Group also meets at Like Me Lighthouse at 5 p.m. So the October event will be on the 15th. And Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909. Main Street. The Kansas City SOFA Group for Significant Others, Friends, Family, and Allies of Transgender Persons will meet on the first and third Wednesday of this month, October 7th and October 21st at 6:30 at the Johnson County Lackman Library. That's at 15345 West 87th Street in Lenexa. The Kansas City PFLAG Chapter for Parents, Families, Friends, and Allies of LGBT LGBT people will meet on the second Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village, and at the fourth Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. And that's the community calendar for the upcoming month. And to all my transgender sisters and brothers out there, be exceedingly good to yourselves. And I have to mention here as we're closing out the show that this is going to be my co-host's last time with us, and I'm very sad to see Luke go on, but you're going on to bigger and better things, right?
Right. I'm going to be focusing more on my graduate program at UMKC, which is already taking up a lot of time that I'm not good with time management, and I'm also sad to leave the show. It's been a great little bit over the past year that I've been involved with the show, and I'll be really missing it, but very open to coming on as a UMKC expert or a trans man in the city expert, for sure.
Absolutely. And I'll let you finish out our last show with our summary, Luke.
Thank you for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Jacob, Drew, and Jennifer Niehaus. I'd also like to thank my co-host, Una Nalling, as well as our sound engineer producer for today, Mark Andrus. You can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to thetenthvoice@gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart.